Take 1,352. Welcome to This Is Money. I'm Georgie Frost, and alongside me and editor Simon Lambert today is assistant editor Lee Boyce. And coming up until a couple of weeks ago, you'd be forgiven for never actually having heard of the word, but now you might find yourself furloughed. But what does that actually mean? Why are we all talking about it? But as workers continue to be hit, attention is turning to the banks. They got a taxpayer helping hand during the financial crisis. So should they be doing more to repay the favour now? The financial regulator certainly thinks so. One industry begging for help is the travel industry, as EasyJet grounds flights. How do you solve the mess that it finds itself in right now? Well, Simon is going to propose a solution. We also still have a new tax year on the way, so Lee will be running us through the April money changes that will impact your wallet. Plus, a pensions blunder, which has been going on for years, left a couple of This Is Money readers out of pocket to the tune of thousands of pounds. But are you being underpaid too? And in an era of lockdowns and social isolation, how does Agent Millionaire deliver premium bond jackpot winners their good news? You can stay up to date, of course, with all the latest breaking money news. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app at first. In the wake of the coronavirus pandemic, the Chancellor's unveiled a number of measures over the past weeks to save jobs and support businesses, and continues to do so at some pace. But what lies at the heart of the coronavirus job retention scheme is something you may never have heard of before, let alone think that it would now apply to you. Now, the scheme works by allowing companies to continue to pay part of their employees' salaries, those who'd otherwise have been laid off, while the government picks up the rest of the bill, to a point, obviously. But in order to access the scheme, staff must be furloughed. But what does that mean? Warm welcome, guys. Simon, furlough. I can pronounce it now. Needless to say, dear listener, we did have a bit of trouble at the start because I just cannot get my word out with this one. Furlough. Furlough.
They might have, in the recording of this podcast, which will then be edited out before it goes out,
have been
another F word rather than furlough, as Georgie was trying to pronounce furlough. Fair dues, because I think you just completely perfectly illustrated the point that up until very, very recently, many people had not even had the need to utter the word furlough, let alone consider what it might mean in a wider context, and certainly what it might mean in the context of their employment. But as you said, this lies at the heart of the job retention scheme. And actually, even when Rishi Sunak announced the job retention scheme, there wasn't really that much mention of furloughing for about a week or so. However, it is a very hot topic this week, because lots of people are now discovering that they are in fact being furloughed. And what this means is that they are effectively still employed by their employer, but they're not working. And in that period of time when they are not working, they will be paid by the government up to 80% of their salary to a maximum of £2,500 a month. So that is the equivalent of £30,000 a year. Obviously, if you take that 80% and take it up to 100%, that's a higher salary than that £30,000 a year. Now, the idea behind this is basically just to stop a huge number of people being made redundant by companies. What the government is trying to do, and what the Chancellor came up with a plan for, is to try and put everybody on a life support measure until lockdown is finished, we start to emerge from the coronavirus outbreak, and then people can just go back to their jobs. Because what you would normally see in a scenario like this, where businesses have literally, in some cases, been told to cease trading, is an absolute wave of redundancies and job cuts. And I mean, we've seen that anyway. But the problem is that if you do that, it becomes a vicious circle. So the government has effectively said, we'll support the wages or a chunk of the wages up to a certain amount. You keep the staff on your books, and then hopefully when this ends, you can pick back up with those staff and everybody will be protected. We talked 2 weeks ago about this idea of helicopter money and universal basic income. And ultimately, I guess this is almost like a kind of universal basic income. It's not universal because not everybody's getting it, but the government is promising it to an awfully large number of people. And I saw a figure quoted today of the bill for this potentially being £60 billion. But ultimately, it's the money that will keep people afloat. It will pay their bills. It will pay their mortgages. And we talked again in that podcast 2 weeks ago and again last week about where's this money coming from? How can we afford this? And the principle the government is working on is that we can't afford not to do it.
I can understand this with small businesses, but it feels quite uncomfortable when you think that effectively the taxpayer is supporting the likes of McDonald's. Are we effectively nationalising McDonald's?
Well, it's not supporting McDonald's, though, is it? It's supporting McDonald's workers.
But they can absolutely afford to pay for this out of the money that's been going to... this is not I'm saying is I can understand that money is going to come from taxpayers to pay for this. However, there are companies, and a lot of criticism has gone towards football clubs recently, that are using taxpayers' money to pay for their staff.
Yeah, and you do start to encounter all kinds of what Lord Mervyn King, governor of the Bank of England at the time of the financial crisis, was fond of calling moral hazard issues here. But ultimately... You take a company like McDonald's. A company like McDonald's could probably get away with continuing to pay its staff for a period of time whilst it was not able to open. And bear in mind that McDonald's went from having its restaurants open to its restaurants shut, but only doing takeaway food.
They're not even doing that. They stopped that.
Stopped altogether.
They could have chosen to keep going if they didn't know that they had that support from the government to then...
Maybe, but I think there's been an awful lot of pressure brought to bear
having a go at McDonald's here. This is just...
I think there's been an awful lot of pressure brought to bear on some of these bigger businesses to actually cease to stop trading, because ultimately it helps keep people at home. The problem you've got is, even if McDonald's is doing drive-through only, is you've got lots of people driving to the McDonald's. I mean, maybe, you know, the volume of McDonald's sold by Uber is unbelievable. But McDonald's is in a position where it's had to stop trading. Whether it's made that decision, whether pressure's been brought on it, whether it's a business decision, whether it's a helping society decision, whether it's a combination of the two, it could probably get away with paying its staff for a period of time. McDonald's is a pretty well-run business. And as far as I'm aware, doesn't really carry huge amounts of debt or have major financial issues. I could stand to be corrected by some listeners here. There are other businesses, though, that would very, very much struggle. And the key issue for any business, ultimately, as to whether they can get through a crisis, is cash flow. Have they got cash coming in so that they can then pay their bills? One of the biggest bills for any company is its wages. And so when the cash flow dives, which it has done in this instance, because they haven't got the money coming in, their next step is to try and cut the thing that they can easily cut. And the thing that they can easily cut is wages, because it's much easier to get rid of people than it is to get rid of your buildings, for example. And so there would be a huge wave of job losses. The government is trying to adopt the position that this is a temporary problem. This is a 3 month, 6 month, you know, maybe even it's a 9 month, 12 month problem. But when that period is over, things should be able to pick back up. And for the economy to have the best chance of picking up when this temporary problem, this black swan event, this thing that's got nothing to do with financial problems, everything to do with a disease, a virus, When the economy can then get started again, its best chance for doing so is to have as many people who haven't suffered the devastating losses of losing their job and not having any money and defaulting on their mortgage and all those other things which lies behind all of this. And that's where the furloughing comes in. But like you say, the football clubs are the highest profile incident where you've got players on huge, huge, huge sums of money continuing to be paid, and then you've got the normal people who work for the club who earn much more normal sums of money being furloughed with the government picking up their wage bills. And the criticism has been, well, perhaps the football clubs should pick up some of that wage bill rather than bunging, you know, 50 grand a week.
Not just
the players.
Footballers, what about the owners of the club, the billionaire owners of the clubs? But yeah, I don't want to get caught up in this. Lee, what I do want to know is this going to work for the companies that we want it to work for and for the people that we want it to work for as well?
Well, that's $1 million question, isn't it, Georgie? I mean, it's going to be hard to know, because at the moment, we're not quite sure when this situation is going to end. So, you know, if this is going to be a temporary sort of 3 month type scenario, you know, perhaps, you know, government must have crunched the numbers on this, but let's not forget that when it announced this, it was done very quickly. Everything has been moving at such a fast pace. It's so hard to know where the end of the line is for this coronavirus crisis. And that's where a lot of this lies. And that there's going to be business casualties. And what the government is trying to do is to stop those casualties. So this week, furlough has been sort of issued at British Airways and EasyJet, for example. You know, these are companies that have very fragile businesses when you really think about it. If they're not flying planes and taking paying passengers, they have no income. So they have no way of paying their staff. And then, you know, if you're talking about 3 months of no flights, for example, where's the income going to be coming from? And it's a measure to save some of these businesses. But, you know, are all of these businesses going to be saved? That's going to be the question that we don't know the answer to until a couple of months' time, when it's a bit clearer as to when this situation might come to an end. But at least the government is stepping in and doing something. You know, a lot of times we're critical of the government for perhaps not acting fast enough. But actually, in this situation, in terms of furlough, it seems to have come up with a concept pretty quickly.
Yeah, not to sort of blow wind, as it were, because you know, we've praised the Chancellor a couple of times on this show. But, you know, the fact that this is one term, furlough, that people wouldn't have heard of or know how it works. This is one issue that's being dealt with in amongst a suite of measures that are being brought in very quickly. The number of people that must be looking at this going, right, what on earth have we got in our books at the moment that we can use in this situation? And furlough is one of those. It just goes to show how hard people are working. I was going to talk about EasyJet a little bit later on, but actually, Simon, I will kind of Lee's teed you up really nicely here because you've been writing about it this week. They did take that decision to ground their flights for a minimum of 2 months. Goodness knows how long it's going to be after that, and furlough their cabin crew as well. The problem, though, being is that you might not realise that, by the way, if you go online. You might also not realise that you are entitled to get your money back. Now, this was quite a simple process in the past, was it not? You would go online and you click a button and eventually you get your money back, as is your rights. But, and I'm not picking on EasyJet here, although they are a good example of it. BA, just the same as well. Very difficult now to get that simple online refund. You have to phone them up. Good luck with that one. Because they're encouraging people instead to rebook, but then you've got the question of when, or to take a credit voucher. And this is making no reference to EasyJet, but the industry generally is, are you as a passenger going to want to take a voucher when airlines could fail? I would suggest EasyJet are probably one of the stronger ones here, but it's not absolutely impossible for airlines to go under. So how on earth do you solve this problem? Do you give them kind of bank-style bailouts? Do you tell them to give out their money to customers who've had their flights cancelled, knowing that that's just taking every money they have at the moment? Simon, what's the answer? Because you are not a disinterested party in this.
I am not a disinterested party in this, I must say. So on Monday morning at 7 a.m, EasyJet announced it was grounding its entire fleet until further notice. An hour and 27 minutes later, at 8:27 a.m, EasyJet emailed me to encourage me and my family to check in online for our flights on Good Friday to Geneva.
Wow.
I know. Slightly galling, I must say. If I go to my EasyJet online account, it still says that those flights are going ahead. Now, I would be very impressed if EasyJet manages to pull this trick off of flying us to Geneva when it is, in fact, flying no planes whatsoever. But I am under no illusion that those flights are going ahead. The holiday is not going ahead. Quite clearly, we have been told not to fly anywhere. That is the reason why EasyJet has grounded its flights. We're flying to Geneva. We're then going to France. France is on lockdown. People are not allowed to leave the house. The ski resorts shut a couple of weeks ago, early for the season. EasyJet, in its announcement, said it had been flying repatriation flights. Basically, it had been doing loads of flights to get people back to the country, that now it considered it had finished those and it was grounding the entire fleet until further notice.
I thought EasyJet said they would still work with the government on that repatriation scheme that the government have announced recently. But apart from that...
Other than maybe flying some special flights, they're definitely not flying people to Geneva for ski and snowboard holidays on the morning of Good Friday.
I don't believe that, Simon.
My understanding is that is not considered essential travel by any government at the moment, and all the ski resorts are shut, and I'm not going on holiday. Now, people have been in a slightly odd position on this one for a while, and are still in a slightly odd position with many of the airlines, because until your flight is cancelled, you are not entitled to your money back. And the airlines have been playing a little bit fast and loose with some of this stuff, trying to delay people, hold out for as long as possible, and so on. Now, once your flight is cancelled and can't go ahead, you are entitled to your money back. Now, EasyJet has basically now cancelled everybody's flights. So the flights are not going ahead. So everybody should be able to just get their money back. However, if you go online, in my instance, you'll discover that your flight is apparently still going, and you can check in online and add your advanced passenger information. But even those who have gone online and find that their flight is cancelled, it's not easy to get a refund. You can't get a cash refund online, certainly at the time when I wrote this column. Grace Gorsden, our reporter, has done a big piece on this week. Lots of very unhappy customers. Effectively, you go online, you're either encouraged to rebook, but you can't actually rebook necessarily exactly the same flights for exactly the same time next year. So, for example, EasyJet has released its winter schedule for next year ahead of when it planned to do so, but it doesn't go as far as Easter. So I can't go book my ski holiday flights next Easter. I can't just go, right, I mean, it's not happening this year, I just go to do it next year. Some people, when they've tried to rebook, have discovered that obviously flights are more expensive. Even for the same thing, they're finding out it's more expensive. Others don't want to rebook because, say, for example, I decided to say, right, well, I'll just use this money instead to book some flights for my summer holiday. I don't know whether I'm going to be going on a summer holiday this year. You know, what if I just set myself up to have the whole experience again? Otherwise, you take vouchers.
And need the money now as well. Mm-hmm.
The vouchers are time limited, and so on. Now, I can understand why the airlines are doing this, right? Because they don't want to make it easy for everybody to get a refund. So what you have to do to get a refund is you have to phone up and speak to them on the telephone. And even then, apparently, they're making it. Well, A, I found it impossible to even get through. And then some of the people who can get through are apparently finding it difficult to get cash refunds out of the airlines. They're doing everything they can to avoid it. Now, I can understand what's going on. Is they can't just suddenly hand out cash to all the passengers because they'll go bust. They can't afford to do so. So they're trying to delay and stall and encourage people to do other things. Yet at the same time, the airline industry is making some quite loud noises and dropping some very heavy hints about requiring some form of massive taxpayer bailout. And I think that you can't really play it two ways there. You can't try to stop your customers getting a refund they're entitled to because they've all had their flights cancelled, when those very same customers are the taxpayers that would be funding said bailout. It also makes it look worse if some of your execs have been paid large sums of money or big bumper dividends recently. But we've got to try to find the middle ground here, I think. Now, I mean, what are the airlines suggesting here? Is EasyJet suggesting that I sacrifice the £500 of those flights and just give it to EasyJet as some form of like charity donation because the airline's in trouble? I mean, that seems a bit off to me. Mm-hmm. Yes, it's not the end of the world, and it feels churlish to be moaning about £500 at the moment. But, you know, some people, I could probably afford to lose the £500. I wouldn't be very happy about it. It is my money. Lots of people can't afford £500 at the moment. And in fact, I got lucky with those flights. Those flights would normally be much more expensive this time of year, probably twice as much. And secondly, if I am going to lose £500, I don't want to make it as like some kind of charity donation to a massive business like EasyJet. So I think that somehow, somewhere down the line, we need to find a middle ground. People clearly don't want vouchers that are either time limited And they fear might be for an airline that's going to go bust and they lose their money. They don't necessarily want to rebook because it's not practical. Either they fear they won't be able to go on a trip in the near future, or they can't rebook in the distance, or they don't have the money to be booking holidays now. They're worried about their jobs. Maybe they've been furloughed. So an idea was put forward by ABTA, the Association of British Travel Agents, which doesn't cover the airlines. It's a travel agent association, as I just mentioned. But it's a very interesting one, which is these refund credit notes. Now, this would be a form of IOU, but it'd be much better than a voucher from the airline, a time-limited voucher from the airline. It would effectively, these the ones ABTA suggesting, would carry the protection that you have with ATOL protection. So if that company, the travel firm that provided you with that voucher went bust, you'd be able to claim through the ATOL scheme. The voucher would be able to be exchanged for cash if you hadn't rebooked a holiday within 4 months, for example, in the future. And this would enable the travel firms to say to people, if you don't want to rebook now and you don't want a voucher, have this, it's worth something because you could cash it in 4 months, or if we go bust, you'll be able to claim. And that buys them maybe the time that they need. And I think this is exactly the same thing that the airline industry should be trying to adopt, because if the airlines don't go bust, it's not a problem. Nobody has to claim on this insurance element of it. Most people, even if they don't book a flight within 4 or 6 months, as long as there isn't a time limit on that credit, they won't actually cash it in. This is how customer inertia works. There's entire industries built on customer inertia. And finally, people would be much more willing to accept this and probably see it as some kind of middle ground. Certainly, I'd see it as more of a middle ground than the idea at the moment, which appears to be, I'm just going to donate 500 quid to EasyJet.
Lee, what's your solution to this problem? Do you think the airlines deserve a bit of a helping hand on this? Or
first of all, can I just give a little shout out to Ryanair that actually gave me a cash refund very quickly a couple of weeks ago when I had to cancel. Well, they cancelled the flights because of coronavirus. And actually, I believe they're still offering cash refunds online rather than having to call up.
Can, because it's not very often that we shout out to Ryanair.
No, so. but the caveat of that is if you apply for your refund online, I don't know how long now the wait is for the cash to come over. I've heard up to 3 weeks, but at least the option's still there to be able to do it online. I think what Simon says makes a lot of sense in terms of that middle ground. You know, if everyone requested cash straight away, you know, the likelihood is airlines are going to go bust that way. But also, on the other hand, you know, a lot of people are going to need that money now. They need it right away. They've lost their jobs. They've been furloughed. They don't know what their financial future looks like. So there needs to be some sort of assurance. I think that's what people are looking for. Assurance that a cash refund, which is rightly theirs through law, they should be offered a cash refund, is there on the table, and there's a time frame as to when that cash is going to be returned. I think that will put it will get rid of a lot of fear for people worried that they're not going to get the cash back for these flights, because it's all well and good offering vouchers for future flights, but we don't know what the future of global travel now looks like. You know, in the next 12 months, are things really going to be back to normal? We don't know.
What do you think it'll look like, Lee? Honestly.
Well, it's difficult to predict. There's been all sorts of figures bounded around. You know, this is the global travel industry is massive. It accounts for something like somewhere between 2-3% of global GDP is going to be hit from this coronavirus outbreak this year. That's a huge number when you really think about it. And I think that people are going to be put off booking too far in advance because they don't know what's going to be around the corner. I think we're going to be seeing a lot of people leaving it to the last minute to book flights. In case a scenario like this happens again, this time next year, who knows? You know, what if there's a COVID-20 that happens next year? There's going to be a lot of unknown in the industry. And I think that people, the other issue is, it's all well and good saying, oh, you can take this trip later in the year. But what if you don't want to? What if you don't want to go to the destination? Well, you know, Simon's going to a ski resort, for example, at some point in February, March, when it's good. He doesn't want to go to a ski resort sometime in the summer, does he? So there's going to be all that kind of thing. And also, flights for next year aren't even out yet. So it's kind of like, there's a lot of unknown. I think people should be told that there is money that's theirs coming to them in the next few months, and if it's an urgent case, if it's you've lost your job or you've been furloughed and you really need the money, you should be prioritised. That's what I think.
I think the unknown issue is so huge. We've never been in a situation now where who knows what any industry is going to look like, but particularly the airline industry. Simon, you were talking about, you know, flights being more expensive. I imagine for the next however long flights, we are not going to go back in any speed to that kind of footloose, fancy free, cheap flight thing that I was such a big fan of. Are we?
No, I think that that's potentially, well, I suppose there's two things that might happen. Either the airlines are going to come out the gates with on an absolute rage of a race to offer as many seats as they possibly can and scoop people up, you know, pile them high, sell them cheap kind of thing. Or you might find that they come out much more cautiously and seats are limited. And actually, as you say, flight prices are more expensive in the future. We talked before on the show about one of the issues that the world faces beyond coronavirus is climate change, combating climate change. Flights are a part of that. Many of us take many, many, many more flights than we would have done in previous years. And that's down to the fact that flying is exceptionally cheap and in some ways artificially cheap. And climate change campaigners would say that it's effectively subsidized. Maybe this is the thing that stops people flying quite so much, and we'll look back on the period from the sort of early noughties, you know, just before the turn of the millennium to now as an aberration. Because certainly if you go back, you know, 30 years, you know, when I was a kid, I definitely didn't fly anywhere near as much as my kids do now. You know, so maybe these things will change dramatically. I don't know.
I hadn't taken a flight until I was 15, I think, apart from when I moved over here from Norway. But yeah, this is a very different world now.
But I do think the most pressing issue is for the airlines is digging themselves out of the hole that they are in. And I certainly think that they are banging the drum for a bailout. And if they are banging the drum for a bailout, they need to start doing much better by all their customers.
Just a really brief one, Simon, on this one before we move on. Do you think the airlines put themselves in a position that made this worse? I mean, obviously this coronavirus would have impacted airlines obviously terribly, terribly badly. But there was always a little bit of unease about when we spoke about the travel industry before, and we had had a number of little airlines collapse. So could they put themselves in a better business position, as it were? Or is this just such a, like you say, a black swan event? It would have decimated any industry like this that is so exposed.
Yeah, they probably could have done. I mean, look, the airline industry is a very cutthroat world, and it's a very cutthroat world amongst the passengers as well nowadays. We can all compare flights very, very easily, and we are pretty ruthless in the decisions that we make. The airlines have had to resort to all kinds of tactics to make money. They flog their seats cheap, 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 but then they screw us on luggage, on food, on drinks, on everything else that they can possibly think of. And as customers, I don't know, have we either accepted that just because we can get cheap flights, or have we just had to accept it because that's the way it is? But there is still a concept of customer loyalty. There is still the element where people will choose one airline over another airline. You might be someone who says, right, I'll fly EasyJet rather than Ryanair. And it takes a while for airlines to turn that round. And they might find that, you know, if they do survive this, and I think the big ones will, because a scenario where you don't have a BA in an EasyJet is not great for the country, to be perfectly honest. I think that the customers have long memories, and it might be that if you didn't get that 600 quid back that time due to coronavirus, then you might not fly EasyJet or BA or any other airline for another few years. You might choose another one instead.
Okay, so talking of industries that have experience with bailouts, let's take a look at the banks. Now, you might have got a few emails from your bank offering certain measures at the moment. I know I certainly have, and some banks are doing quite a lot. However, the regulator wants a bit more consistency in what banks are doing to help their customers. So they've announced some proposals that could come into force next Thursday. So Lee, if you would, just run us through what some of these measures are and how they could help.
That's right, Georgie. So the FCA is hoping to get some of these implemented quickfire, which is not often the case when it comes to all of the banks cooperating with each other and agreeing on terms of things. The FCA is obviously very keen to make sure that this becomes a sort of level playing field, so that all banks are seen to be doing the same thing, rather than some offering, you know, certain help and others not, or the levels of what the help is being issued at. So it's kind of to try and make sure that whoever you bank with, if you're going to be in financial difficulty, to make sure everyone gets the same access. Now, key to these proposals are overdrafts. So overdrafts have been in the news quite a bit. And in this podcast in the last few months, we've got bumper new overdraft rates coming in for some customers, up to 40% for some of these high street banks. What the regulator wants is it wants everyone to be offered a £500 interest-free overdraft. Now, not many banks offer this anymore. There's a couple that offer a small buffer interest-free, but nothing like £500 anymore. But the FCA wants that to come in for those who are going to struggle, perhaps have lost their job and are going to need to rely a little bit on credit without opening a credit card, for example. There's also other help we've talked about as well, things like mortgage payment holidays. Now, that has been offered by a lot of the banks, but there was quite a lot of noise this week about people that had applied for those mortgage holidays. And of course, we had first of the month 2 days ago, and a lot of those payment holidays weren't implemented in time. So people had their mortgage payments taken out when they weren't expecting them to be taken out. So that was a bit of an issue this week. That is on the cards for people already. And then we've got things like credit cards and personal loans. So the FCA wants payments to be frozen for the time being. So basically, people can again ask for a payment holiday type scenario in this, where they'll be able to freeze payments for 3 months. Or to be required to pay back sort of nominal sums, it's just small amounts. A payment break would be helpful for a lot of people, and you won't be charged late payment fees and that type of thing. So that's another thing that the FCA wants to be brought in, and it doesn't want people to be charged, you know, insane amounts of interest for borrowing in this period, which is understandable, because if people are having to heavily rely on things like credit cards or loans that they've got or overdrafts, we don't want there to be a sting in the tail. The FCA doesn't want there to be seen in a few months' time a load of people that have relied on credit in this way and then been penalised with hefty charges. So the FCA is keen for that not to happen. It's also come out and said it doesn't want any credit scores hit by anything that happens in the next couple of months linked to coronavirus, which is quite big. And the credit reference industry is seems to be on board with this, because basically if you're going to get lending and let's say towards the end of the year and you've missed payments of things like credit cards, that is usually a big no-no. You know, that makes you, you know, a red flag comes up onto your profile, and banks and lenders will be less likely to give you the best rates or lend to you all, you know, whatsoever. So the FCA is keen for that not to happen. And the other big one, actually, which Rob Hole, our deputy motoring editor, wrote about this week, which I had actually not really thought about, which is quite interesting, is about car finance. So, you know, mortgage and rent, you know, tends to be the biggest outlay for most people. But then the second biggest outlay tends to be motoring costs. And for 9 in 10 cars are bought on some sort of finance, 9 in 10 new cars. Yeah. So a lot of people will have payments of, you know, a good few £100 a month that perhaps, again, lost their jobs or being furloughed. And the cars are sitting on the driveway. It's kind of frustrating if you're not driving anywhere in it and it's just sat there because you can't go anywhere unless you're just going to your local shops. It's kind of like almost like a white elephant on your driveway, isn't it? So it's kind of like an interesting one, that, because if you stop paying or there's some sort of payment holiday for car finance, and that has a knock-on effect to the manufacturers. So there are meant to be separate proposals coming out for car finance in the next few days as well. If in doubt, just get in touch with any bank, anywhere you've got finance. These helplines are busy, but if you are stuck in a helpline, I would definitely have some sort of paper trail, as in send emails to customer service representatives as well, to show that you have been trying to do something to, you know, help the position that you are in. But if in doubt, you should just get in touch with any kind of lender and find out what they're offering, what's on the table. And, you know, there's going to be a lot of people that are in this boat, Georgie, a lot of people that are going to be struggling financially. Perhaps we've got a massive personal debt levels in this country anyway. You know, a lot of people hold a lot of money on credit cards, on personal loans, on car finance. Those kinds of people that have those vast amounts of debt are probably concerned anyway. Yeah. But now this is like an extra level of concern. And actually, the FCA proposals are good. It is a little bit of like kicking the can down the road. Again, it's seeing in the summer where are we at with this whole crisis and where it goes. What happens then? Is there just going to be another payment freeze? You know, how long and how far can this go on for?
Well, we don't know. We're hoping it's going to be very quick and over. We do say in the past, we've criticised regulators, the FCA, for not doing enough, not doing it quite quickly. So they have at least taken action quite quickly. But some of the action, particularly related to overdrafts, makes it think like they're just almost resetting something they sort of ballsed up in the first place inadvertently. But Lee, you spoke about, I'm going to move on because we spoke about car tax and the like. Because it's April, new tax year as well on the 6th, and the personal finance world keeps turning and taxes change, money goes in our wallets, money comes out. So give us a bit of a rundown of the new tax year coming, what financial measures are coming in, and some that have already, and I'm thinking things like council tax, TV license, mobile bills. You might think of car tax, as I said, that or you said that elephant on your driveway that you can't drive. You may have got your car tax bill through the post, which is ever more galling because you can't actually use your car.
That's it, Georgie. Yeah, so basically April 1st is kind of a bill hike day. It's where a lot of bills tend to go up, usually with RPI, which is a higher inflation measure than CPI, and a lot of bills nudge up in this way. Now, the big one actually this week has been council tax, and council tax was actually trending on Twitter. People and quite het up that their council tax bill was going up, especially because of coronavirus. Again, talking about extra strain on people's wallets. I had my council tax increase through the post on the day of the budget, which it feels like a very, very long time ago, doesn't it? And it was up 3.9%, which is a fairly sizable amount, I would suggest. But in this story that we've written this week, Grace Gordon, our bills reporter, had a look at this. So the average increase is 3.9%. So I'm basically right on money. Essex Council have really hit the nail on the head there and gone right down the middle. But actually, for some people, it's going to go up by up to 15%. And the big losers in this are people, residents in Wales. Some councils...
Pembrokeshire, that's like 15.4%.
15.4% is absolutely huge. Wow. That's a massive bill increase.
But it's Wales generally is over 8%, isn't it?
That's exactly it, Georgie. So, you know, they've obviously gone on a big council tax. And there's a lot of people... there's a lot of people on Twitter that, as I say, quite upset about these bill rises. And, you know, it's just unfortunate timing, isn't it? You know, council tax bills tend to go up on the 1st of April. I think we've had one freeze in the last sort of 15 years or so, and that was during the financial crisis.
But it makes you think, Lee, if that those were the sort of hikes that were coming in before this whole coronavirus issue, what are we going to get after? Because councils and local authorities, they were struggling anyway.
Well, a lot of the increases have been down to a couple of factors, social care being one of the big ones, police is the other big one. And actually, there was quite a few people on Twitter that were kind of defending councils, saying, you know, they've kept services running. You know, I can only talk for my local services here, but for example, things like the bin men that you sometimes take for granted, you know, they're still coming around every week, they're keeping the world turning. And I guess these things come at a cost, but it's how far council tax can keep rising, Georgie, I guess, in the coming years. It's a pretty hated tax as it is. And how much you can keep making it rise by, you know, if it's going to be inflationary, you know, quite frequently, then people start to kick off a bit. And elsewhere...
Things that come again very briefly, Lee,
I went off on a bit
radio DJ rundown.
Yeah, TV licences going up by £3. Water bills for most will fall. But it, for some people, they're going to see up to 4% rises. NHS prescriptions, which is obviously very topical at the moment, up another 15p for those in England. Car tax, as you mentioned, Georgie, is going up. Now, this is a bit more of a confusing one. But if you're buying a new car, you're going to see a massive car tax hike from Sunday, which is explained very well by Rob in our story, if you'd like to look that up. But also other utilities as well, things like Sky TV and broadband could be going up 10%. So if you're in that boat, if you're with one of the telecoms providers that's hiking your bills, have a shop around, make sure that you're haggling with them. Again, that goes with mobile bills as well. And actually, one bit of good news is that energy bills are likely to be falling. But that aside, when I say that, tariff prices are falling. With more of us at home using more energy, you're likely to see your bill go up anyway. So even though the cost is coming down, more of us are using more energy.
All right, Lee. Well, let's turn our attention back to coronavirus, but hopefully something a little bit lighter, because each month Agent Million personally visits the home of two winners of the premium bond jackpot to deliver the good news. This month, however, of course, they can't do that unless they want to leave it on the doorstep. I don't know if you can do that, but it's not a good idea. We need to protect people. But while obviously it's very exciting for the person involved, it doesn't count as an essential journey. So being Agent Million and secret and planning, they have a plan. What is it, Simon?
So the issue is Agent Million really is a hush hush job. We have previously interviewed Agent Million in the past. Agent Million has not always been the same person. There have been different people who do the job. We have interviewed one of the Agent Millions. And what they do is they will only speak to the person who has won the prize. Now, if they ring on the doorbell and the person who has won the prize's husband answers, they will ask for Mrs. So-and-so. And if Mrs. So-and-so is not there and the husband says, well, can I tell them who called? They will not say it was Agent Million. They will say, oh, no, sorry, I'll just come back. And so Mrs. So-and-so's husband may get a little bit suspicious, especially if Agent Million is a man that time. But they can't do that now.
Right.
So they will have to do it from 2 meters apart. So they would have to ring the doorbell. The doorbell would be opened and they would have to shout across the driveway, hi, it's Agent Million. You've won £1 million. Right. Now, obviously, this is a problem, because then all the neighbours would know, and that's not very secret. So the premium bonds have had to find another way of doing this. Not just not giving people £1 million. So they did come up with a way of doing this. However, the strategy was implemented and it was a top secret plan. So we are not allowed to know what the top secret plan was, other than that Agent Million did observe the correct social distancing measures.
Right. So we don't know. Okay.
No, it's a secret.
It's a secret. We're not allowed to know because it's a secret.
Agent Million.
There's something about that story that I just told you that does seem faintly ridiculous, doesn't there? Judging from the pause at the end of it. But there's something about that story that I like. Even in this day and age of widespread sharing of personal details about ourselves, that Agent Million is still top, top secret. And that even Agent Million's social distancing plan is so top, top secret that we're not allowed to know what it is.
Yeah. That's quite something, isn't it, Simon? That's quite something. But anyway, you can keep up to date with all the latest Breaking Money news, except what's happening with Agent Million, because, well, we don't even know that. Just go to thisismoney.co.uk or download the app. And if you have any comments or questions for the team, except anything related to Agent Million, because as I said, we don't know anything about that, but we'll write about it anyway. Anything you'd like them to look into, Simon?
You can email us your questions or problems to editor@thisismoney.co.uk. You can tweet us what you think Agent Million's secret plan was, or whether you saw someone acting suspiciously in your locality earlier this week that could have been Agent Million. And just to let you know, those two areas where they could have been behaving suspiciously were Hertfordshire and Essex. So anybody who saw anybody suspicious there, was it Agent Million? Tweet us at This Is Money. You can come to thisismoney.co.uk/podcast if you want to join in the debate in the comments. And if you managed to listen to all of that conversation about Agent Million, even better work there. Thanks, marvelous. Listeners.
Thank you, listeners. And if you like our podcast, why not rate us on iTunes? It helps people find us.